Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories that I'll be looking into on today's program. Pope Benedict has urged the bishops of Korea to help their flock resist the lure of materialism and the negative effects of a secular mentality. And we hear how the South Korean bishops are trying to support their brothers and sisters inside communist North Korea. On Sunday, the Pope visited a Rome hospital run by the Knights of Malta and told the patients that even in sickness, God gives comfort. Earlier at his Angelus address, the Holy Father returned to the central message of his encyclical Spe Salvi when he said the world needs God, as otherwise it remains without hope. And to mark World AIDS Day, Monsignor Vitillo, a special advisor on HIV and AIDS with Caritas Internationalis, gives us his reaction to the latest statistics on the disease. Here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict has urged the bishops of South Korea to help their flock resist the lure of materialism and the negative effects of a secular mentality. His remarks came when he received the bishops of Korea at the end of their ad limina visit, together with the apostolic prefect of Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. Chris Altieri reports.
Pope Benedict XVI began his remarks to the gathered bishops by noting what he called the remarkable progress the Church has made on the Korean Peninsula and in Central Asia since the arrival of missionaries in the region over 400 years ago, and their return to Mongolia just 15 years ago.
This growth is due in no small part to the outstanding witness of the Korean martyrs and others throughout Asia who remained steadfastly faithful to Christ and his Church. The endurance of their testimony speaks eloquently of the fundamental concept of communio that unifies and vivifies ecclesial life in all its dimensions.
Drawing on the Gospel according to John, which contains numerous exhortations to abide in the love and truth of Christ that evoke the image of a sure and safe dwelling place, the Holy Father said the evangelist also had to urge his communities to remain in that love. For already some had been enticed by the distractions which lead to interior weakness and eventual detachment from the communio of believers.
This admonition to remain in Christ's love also has a particular significance for you today. Your reports attest to the lure of materialism and the negative effects of a secularist mentality. When men and women are drawn away from the Lord's dwelling place, they inevitably wander in a wilderness of individual isolation and social fragmentation. For it is only in the Word made flesh that the mystery of man truly becomes clear.
The Pope said the bishops must strive to ensure that the bond of communion which unites Christ to all the baptized is safeguarded and experienced as the heart of the mystery of the Church, if they are to be effective shepherds of hope.
With their eyes fixed on the Lord, the faithful must echo and use the martyr's cry of faith, "We know and believe the love God has for us." Such faith is sustained and nurtured by an ongoing encounter with Jesus Christ, who comes to men and women through the Church, the sign and sacrament of communion with God and of unity among all people.
The Holy Father said the gateway to this mystery of communion with God is baptism, which is the initiative of God, and far more than a social ritual or welcome into a particular community.
Souls reborn through the waters of new life enter the door of the universal Church, and are drawn into the dynamism of the life of faith.
The Pope said he shares the concern many of the bishops expressed regarding not a few of the numerous adults received into the Church in their region every year who fail to maintain a commitment to the full participation in liturgical celebrations, which is a right and obligation by reason of baptism.
Your programs designed to highlight the importance of the Sunday Mass should be infused with a sound and stimulating catechesis on the Eucharist. This will foster a renewed understanding of the authentic dynamism of Church life among your faithful. I join you in urging the laity, and in a special way the young people in your region, to explore the depth and breadth of our Eucharistic communion. Gathered every Sunday in the Lord's house, we are consumed by Christ's love and truth, and empowered to bring hope to the world.
The Holy Father also discussed the need to form and sustain persons in the consecrated life whom he called witnesses and artisans of that plan of communion which stands at the center of history according to God, and to whom he sent his appreciation of the prophetic contribution they are making to ecclesial life in their respective countries. The Pope also stressed the importance of marriage and family life, saying the bishop's efforts in this field stand at the heart of the evangelization of culture and contribute much to the well-being of society as a whole.
This vital apostolate, in which many priests and religious are already engaged, rightly belongs also to the laity. The growing complexity of matters regarding the family, including the advances in biomedical science, about which I spoke recently to Korea's ambassador to the Holy See, raises a question of providing appropriate training for those committed to working in this area.
The Holy Father asked the bishops to convey to their people his particular gratitude for their generosity to the Universal Church, saying both the growing number of missionaries and the contributions offered by the laity are an eloquent sign of their selfless spirit. The Pope also said he is aware of the practical gestures of reconciliation undertaken for the well-being of those in North Korea and encouraged the initiatives and invoked Almighty God's providential care upon all North Koreans.
Throughout the ages, Asia has given the Church and the world a host of heroes of the faith who are commemorated in the great song of praise, Te Martyrum Candidatus, Laudat Exercitus. May they stand as perennial witnesses to the truth and love which all Christians are called to proclaim.
Bishop John Chang of the Diocese of Chungcheong is president of the South Korean Bishops' Conference and chairman of their Commission for Reconciliation with People in North Korea. He told Philippa Hitchin about his church's efforts to support their brothers and sisters inside the isolated communist state, which has been cut off from the South since the end of the Korean War in 1953.
Well, I have the jurisdiction on paper, but in matter of fact, no real contact to single Christians or Catholics in the North. And sporadically, I managed to go there, quite rarely actually, but it's difficult to have real contact with the faithful in the north of that part of my jurisdiction, Ochoco. That's to the east, northeast of the country, it's a rather vast area, mountainous area. But as I said, not really free access.
You say your bishop's committee works towards the goal of reconciliation. What kind of work can you do? What can the church do, perhaps, to support this effort towards reuniting the two Koreas?
I think we distinguish between the political system and the people, and we try to meet the immediate needs of the people in most need as far as we can. Each diocese sets apart about 1% of its budget to offer humanitarian aid to the North, and sometimes far more than 1%. That's one thing. There are also religious communities and groups that do make their effort on their own, and the Bishop's Committee tries to grasp what is all going on and how to assess and coordinate this and how to look for really meaningful ways to offer real aid to the North rather than approach it politically.
There do seem to have been some signs of hope on the political level, don't there? The recent meeting between the two leaders, a new rail link between the two parts of the country. What kind of hopes do you have that this will be leading slowly towards the goal of opening up the North?
Well, the government of the North, I think it's facing rather serious difficulties in all fronts. And the south, from the southern side, the present government is very anxious to establish peaceful ways of finding reconciliation and achieving ultimate unity. So they are trying to lay out some plans which may or may not be carried out in full in the near future. But anyhow, railway is not going to be opened so fast. I mean, it takes a lot of also doing in the I mean, proposing ideas and general lines is necessary, but implementing is another matter which it takes a lot of real work, I think.
There are many families, aren't there, divided by this DMZ, the demarcation line. Yes. What contact do they have across the border with each other?
They do not have free contact. We estimate that somewhere near 7 million people, north and south, are members of separated families, and there is also a considerable number of abroad, for example, immigrants in the U.S. who are from the north, who haven't been able to meet their family freely. So the two sides have agreed to sporadic meeting, more symbolic meeting, at certain places of very limited number of people, like 100 or 200 people. When you consider the very huge number, something in the order of 7 million, and many of them aging very fast, so they might pass away before they ever manage to meet each other. But there is no freedom of movement into the north, nor movement from the north into the south among the families. So it's a very sad and serious situation.
There has been a little effort, hasn't there, by the North Korean government to encourage some limited tourism across the border.
Yes, there are a couple of sites, and there's one more perhaps going to be opened up in the north near the border, near the Chinese border on the mountain. But it's a fairly well-controlled access, and of course there are lots of people who are anxious to set foot somehow on that side, so they can have some sense of having been to that part, you know. But it is quite controlled and limited up to now. We hope it opens up to a much more, how shall I say, open access and greater freedom of movement in the future, but up to now it hasn't been realized.
You say that the church is helping to run humanitarian projects, doing what you can to support people there. How difficult is life for most people there in the north? How serious is the humanitarian situation?
Well, in the capital city of Pyongyang, which is more a showcase city, it's not so apparent, but if you go into the countryside, the situation can be quite traumatic. It's very serious, yes, in some parts.
Your own church down in South Korea is growing very fast, isn't it? How do you explain this, and what do you see perhaps as the biggest challenges facing your church in the south?
That's a very difficult question. Why the church has been growing rather well in our country, we can't reduce it to some simple reasons. I think there's a whole large number of different reasons why it happened. I think we have this heritage of lay involvement in the church right from the start of our history. So the people, I mean, the faithful feel this is their church. They feel responsible and they feel really deeply involved in making this church a living community. That's one thing. They have a sense of mission, having to share their faith with other people. It's very strong. That's one thing. And there have been some exemplary faith Catholics who have set good examples around them, besides, of course, the martyrs who have offered their lives to witness to the faith. And I think in general, because the church still enjoys a very high degree of esteem from the people for its integrity and its impartial, how shall I say, concern for the good well-being of the people rather than being in any way caught up in a partisan dispute. People still do trust the Catholic Church, by and large, I should say. Thanks to God.
Speaking recently to the new South Korean ambassador, Pope Benedict raised his concerns about the scientific, pioneering scientific work that goes on in South Korea. How much is the church able, perhaps, to voice its ethical concerns in this area?
Safeguarding life and
exactly.
Dignity of life. We are very actively involved, not just voicing it, but we are also mounting major efforts at research. for viable ways which do not raise ethical problems. So the Catholic medical schools and hospitals are of very good quality, and they are mounting very active researches into other types of stem cells, you know, rather than embryonic stem cells. And we are funding researches, we are getting considerable results from these researches. So we are. That's one thing, that's the medical scientific side. There's also this side of trying to involve people in having a wholesome outlook on the whole question of life. So we're laying a great emphasis on life movement, what we call, which is not just the medical or biological. It involves the family, first of all, because the collapse of the family is, I think, at the root of a lot of our ills in society. So it's an integral look at the family and at life as a whole. I think we're trying to uphold and promote those values.
That was Bishop John Chang, president of the South Korean Bishops' Conference, speaking there to my colleague Philippa Hitchin. On Sunday, Pope Benedict visited a Rome hospital run by the Knights of Malta and told the patients that even in sickness, God gives comfort and the power of his love. The Pope's words came at a mass celebrated during his visit to the St. John the Baptist Hospital, which for 35 years has been an important centre for neurotherapy and the treatment of brain damage. Earlier, at his Angelus address, the Pope returned to the central message of his encyclical Spes Salvi, when he said, "The world needs God, as otherwise it remains without hope." Chris Altieri reports on the Pope's hospital visit and his Angelus address.
The Pope celebrated Mass and later visited the unit where care is given to those who have recently come out of coma. In his homily, the Holy Father recalled how the Sovereign Military Order of Malta has from the earliest days of its long history, when its members were fighting to defend Christendom, always been involved with generosity and dedication to the care of the sick, and especially of the sick who are among the poor and marginalized.
Il saluto più affettuoso è per voi, cari malati.
It was especially to the sick that the Holy Father spoke during his homily, saying they are dear to him and that he prays every day for the sick and for the families of those who suffer illness. Returning to the theme of hope, to which the Holy Father dedicated his recent encyclical Spes Salvi, Pope Benedict said the Advent liturgy will continue to tell us throughout the coming weeks that we must not cease to call on Christ and will exhort us to go toward him in the knowledge that he never ceases to visit us. In trial and sickness, said Pope Benedict, God mysteriously visits us, and if we give ourselves over entirely to his will, we can experience the power of his love. In remarks before the Sunday Angelus, which the Holy Father recited with the faithful who braved the rain and late autumn chill to greet him in St. Peter's Square, Pope Benedict said, "With his cross and resurrection, Christ has revealed to us the visage of a God so great in love that he has communicated to us an indestructible hope, unbreakable even by death, because the life of the person who trusts in the Father is open to blessed eternity."
Angelus Domini Nunciavit Mariae.
Following the Angelus prayer, Pope Benedict greeted the faithful in many languages, including English.
My special greeting goes to the pilgrims from Brisbane in Australia. This Sunday marks the beginning of the liturgical season of Advent. May this time of joyful expectation and spiritual preparation for the Lord's coming be one of genuine conversion and interior renewal for Christians everywhere. Upon you and your families, I invoke God's richest blessings.
Saturday, December the 1st, marked World AIDS Day, a global initiative focusing this year on the need for visionary and innovative leadership to help meet the many targets that have been set in the fight against HIV and AIDS. At his general audience last week, Pope Benedict appealed for even greater efforts to stop the spread of HIV infections, saying he felt spiritually close to all those affected by the pandemic. As we marked World AIDS Day, the latest statistics show a drop in the estimated numbers of people living with HIV worldwide. According to UNAIDS, there are just over 33 million people living with the virus, around 95% of them in developing nations. Monsignor Bob Vitillo is Special Advisor on HIV and AIDS with Caritas Internationalis and has been working with church leaders on this issue for over two decades. Philippa Hitchin asked him if there is anything we can celebrate on this World AIDS Day.
I think we need to approach this World AIDS Day both with some celebration and then still a great deal of concern. We can celebrate the fact that in some countries of very high prevalence, the infection rate has begun to go down. At the same time, we're challenged by the fact that in some of those very same countries, new people are being infected every day. And also, those who have changed their behavior don't always maintain the behavior change and begin to engage in sexual activity outside of marriage and therefore put themselves and others at greater risk. The other thing is that I think we need to celebrate the fact that more and more people are getting access to the life-saving antiretroviral medications. Even in developing countries, more people are getting access to these medications and therefore are able to live longer, are able to take care of their families. Again, we have to be challenged by the fact, though, that only about 50% of the people who need these medications are getting access to them. And so there are many, many more people that we have to help to get these medications. And then finally, I think we have to look beyond the numbers, beyond the quantitative analysis, and look at the qualitative situation. Those people who are living with HIV, especially in the developing countries, and especially the poor, even in the high-income countries, are still subject to a great deal of suffering, marginalization, discrimination, and stigmatization. And so we have to see this World AIDS Day as an opportunity to face the challenge that we bring down the stigma and that we make sure that everyone has equal access to medication, to care and support.
The churches have a particularly significant role to play here, don't they, in this work of trying to break through barriers of stigma and discrimination. And yet many church leaders would say governments are still not willing to work more closely together with the churches on this crucial issue.
Yes, the churches certainly have a great deal role to play and are playing a great role. When we have religious leaders speaking out against stigmatization, when we have religious leaders such as many in the Catholic Church reaching out to touch people with HIV and AIDS and to be sure that they get good quality care, that speaks very loudly to the rest of the population that still has a great deal of fear and myths that they operate under with regard to HIV and AIDS. And in those countries where churches and governments have been able to work well together, then we begin to see some of that lowering of the infection rate and some of the better numbers that have been issued on this World AIDS Day. However, in many countries, still there's an effort by governments to control the situation when no government, no church, or any one group in society can control the situation of HIV and AIDS. It really takes coordination of efforts. And especially in those countries that try to manage all of the medication by themselves, because a great deal of money comes in some of the developing countries in order to fund these programs. When the governments try to manage this all by themselves, it's really impossible to reach out, especially to the people living in the most rural areas, the most marginalized people in society. That's exactly where the churches are serving. And so I believe the governments have to open up and begin to work much more actively with the churches, both to fight discrimination and to deliver services.
The theme for this World AIDS Day, Keeping the Promise, is focusing very much on visionary leadership, isn't it? What does this mean to you?
Well, I think we first of all have to make sure, in keeping with this theme, that the leaders of the church come out and speak about HIV and AIDS and show the kind of leadership that the church could and should take in response to HIV. And we've had that. Pope Benedict XVI already has spoken about this in his Wednesday audience. He's done it each year on the occasion of World AIDS Day. That speaks very loudly to the church, both Catholic Church as well as other people of goodwill. Many bishops' conferences have done similar efforts in terms of speaking about this. So the church leaders are taking leadership, but then also we need church leaders and believers in general to ask their governments to take more leadership and to hold their governments accountable to keep the promises that they've made in terms of getting more access to medication, care, and support.
You're currently in the Ukraine, aren't you, talking to bishops there, seeing what the leaders of the churches there are doing to combat AIDS in an area which is of extreme concern at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, I'm here in the Ukraine to speak to the Synod of Greek Catholic Bishops, who showed a great deal of concern as we reflected on this for a whole day. Not only the challenge to the church in Ukraine, but the challenge to the church throughout the world that's posed by HIV. But the bishops here especially are concerned about the situation of Ukraine. The largest, about 90% of all of the new cases in Eastern Europe and Central Asia occur in two countries, the Russian Federation and Ukraine. And so the bishops are very, very sensitive to this fact and wanted to think deeply and then begin to strategize some action steps in terms of trying to address the situation in the Ukraine.
What kind of strategies are you talking about? Can you give us some very practical ideas of the ways in which you'd like to see them working more closely on this issue?
Well, first of all, we need to expand the efforts that are already being made by Caritas in the Ukraine, both of the Greek Catholic Church and of the Latin Church, because they already are reaching out. They're providing home care services, treatment services, especially to the poorest people affected by HIV. And by doing that, then they also help to fight stigma and discrimination in the population. But also, the church in the Ukraine is looking to train the clergy and religious about this so that they can overcome their own fears and that they could give very positive pastoral support to people living with and affected by HIV.
Catholics are, of course, not the majority church there in the Ukraine. What is the situation in terms of working together perhaps with the Orthodox churches on this?
I know that the Catholic Church is involved in the All-Ukrainian Council of Churches in terms of trying to have an ecumenical approach to this.
This is a question I ask you perhaps every year when we speak at this time, but you've been dealing with this for so many years now. What is it perhaps at this time that gives you most hope in the struggle against HIV/AIDS? People you've met or stories you've heard that really do give you the courage to continue fighting this, what seems to be still an uphill struggle?
Well, I usually give you the same kind of answer every year, but I really believe in it, so I have to continue to give that answer, and that's in the people who are living with HIV. 2 weeks ago, I was in Botswana working with the clergy and the religious in that country, and we invited a man in his 30s to come and give testimony to us, a man named Paul, and he's living with AIDS. He's already lost his wife to AIDS. He has two children, one of whom is infected and the other is not infected, but he spoke so eloquently about the care and support that he found within his Catholic community, and talked about how his faith gave him so much hope to continue to live, to be able to raise his children. He has a very important job and a very demanding job, but he's able to do that. He manages his medications. He sings in the church choir. He's involved in a number of the Catholic groups in his parish, and I think that's the kind of hope that all of us need to strive to have in our lives, especially during this Advent season. We're reminded ourselves of that. And that's what gives me hope to continue this kind of work in trying to encourage and accompany the church as it responds to this tremendous challenge of AIDS.
Let's join our hands today.
That was Monsignor Bob Vitillo, Special Advisor on HIV and AIDS with Caritas Internationalis, speaking to my colleague Philippa Hitchin. And that's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. Don't forget, you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.